This is KYUK Public Radio for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I'm Evan Erickson. Almost everyone in Kipnuk and Quigilingok had to evacuate in the wake of Typhoon Halong. Many in the communities have been looking for normalcy while displaced, and one familiarity they've found is high school sports. KYUK's Samantha Watson reports from a basketball tournament that brought back together coastal YK Delta teams.
At the Midcoast League basketball tournament in Eek, the gym is loud, just like coastal basketball tournaments always are. Among the noise are cheers for the Kipnuk and Quigilingok teams, but no one traveled from those communities to be here today. Student Curtis Stock Jr. plays for the Kipnuk boys team. His family was evacuated to Anchorage after the storm.
I think when we got here, forgot how to dress up in a village way, because we're mostly in the city.
Back in his home region, about 100 miles from his village, he says it's a breath of fresh Delta air.
It feels lighter than Anchorage.
The Kipnuk boys and girls teams reformed out of displaced students who now attend Anchorage high schools. There, the boys are part of student bodies three times the size of their hometowns. In the city, they take a bus to and from practice. They aren't able to roam free in the way they can in the village, where nearly everyone is known, and there are no cars in sight. When it's time for basketball practice, though, the boys come back to a familiar group of nine.
I think most of them are missing village life because village life is freedom.
That's Kipnuk boys coach, Jesse Chokok. He says this tournament is the first time back on the YK Delta since the storm for many of the boys.
On Wednesday when we got here, a snow machine passed by and a lot of the boys were like, the smell of the snow machine was just refreshing.
Chokok's family has a home in Anchorage, but he spends 9 months of the year back in the village because that's where his son, Dallas, wanted to go to school to play sports. A few weeks before the storm, Dallas passed away at 15. He says right after the typhoon, he heard a lot of people talking like Kipnuk and Quig didn't exist anymore. It didn't sit right with him, especially thinking about his son's basketball teammates.
And I didn't want all the students to think, not to think like this. What if Halong didn't hit us, we'd be playing right now.
When the school district asked him to coach the Kipnuk boys team, he says he was hesitant. Being from Quig, he didn't know what the boys would think. But he says now he's not sure where he'd be without the team.
And they know how I'm going through, and they know. I always tell them, if you guys weren't there for me to coach, I don't know where I would be today. You guys always give me strength to look forward for the next day.
He says he's been able to see Dallas in them, a kid who was kind to everyone and loved basketball. And he's been able to help the boys adjust, moving through their own grief of being displaced from their homes. Even though basketball is still happening, it looks very different. To make the season work, the Kipnuk team, which has nine players total, was slotted into the JV bracket of the 4A League, the division with the largest schools in the state, with tryouts and A, B, and C teams.
Everything is so new to them. Big school, big gym with big bleachers all around. And when we got here on their first game, the bleachers were full with the people that can speak our native tongue.
Chokok says when they played their first game in Eek, he could see this kind of shocked the boys, that suddenly there was an audience they knew. Adrian Kayunya has a daughter on the Quigilingok team, which is based out of Bethel Regional High School.
I feel like after the typhoon happened, this is like one big happy family for us. And seeing Kipnuk and Quig people, it's happiness.
She says, having a basketball team while displaced has had a positive impact on her daughter.
I can see some motivation in school and for the village. I could see so much motivation because they look forward to practice. Like, not only for basketball, it was for NYU, it was for volleyball, it was for basketball now. And now we're here. We are here now.
Kayunya says it feels normal to be here. She keeps forgetting she didn't come here from Quig. However, life on the other side of the tournament still looks different. Doc Jr. says his family will be moving out of the hotel they've been in since the storm.
My family finally got to apartment yesterday, and I can't wait to see it.
He says it's been good to be back here and play in their 1A home division, even though things are different now.
It doesn't feel the same because of that typhoon. It just changed our life. But these guys are laughing.
At the Mid-Coast tournament, it's clear these things live together. The big truths and the simple fact of loving ball. It's something they've been able to navigate together, not just as a team, but as Kipnuk Falcons. In Eek, I'm Samantha Watson.
The Alaska Board of Fisheries is set to deliberate on a series of proposals that would sharply restrict commercial salmon fishing in the South Alaska Peninsula, commonly referred to as Area M. The board's decision on those proposals could determine what happens in a controversial debate that's been raging among Alaska's industry stakeholders for years. The South Peninsula is a mixed-stock fishery, which means that many of the salmon caught there are migrating to other locations. Critics say that Area M fishermen are intercepting salmon headed to rivers farther north, which has frustrated many subsistence fishermen in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta region who are experiencing crisis-level low returns. About a third of the proposals would significantly reduce fishing time during the region's peak sockeye harvest. Kylie Thompson is the president of the Peninsula Fishermen's Coalition and the Area M Seiners Association. And he's worried.
It's terrifying. It's feeling like end times because there's all those June proposals, which one, every single one of them is dramatic cuts to the June fishery.
Fishermen say they've already voluntarily cut their chum harvest by more than 50% since 2022 under an adaptive management plan later endorsed by the board. They argue further limits could destabilize small single industry communities.
And what we've already been doing for the last 3 years has cut us back. So even more cuts back on that.
Communities in the region like Sand Point, King Cove, and False Pass warn that if fishing disappears, so do their towns. King Cove lost its only processor almost 3 years ago, which has devastated its revenue and population. People like Thompson warn that Sand Point, which only has one processor, Trident, would be next.
These are fishing communities. There's nothing else here. The end of our processors, and then once the processors go, we can just look at King Cove as an example. The community just slowly starts to dry up. Actually, quickly starts to dry up.
State fishery managers say changes adopted in 2023, combined with industry-led stand-downs and time area closures, have been effective in reducing Western Alaska chum harvest. The department describes the current management plan as an effective conservation tool. But in Sand Point, local leaders say the schedule is already restrictive. The city's advisory committee formally opposed several of the June reduction proposals. The Board of Fisheries meeting in Anchorage wraps up today when the board is expected to make a decision on the proposals. Alaska senators moved forward a new version of Governor Mike Dunleavy's tax bill last week. It bears little resemblance to the bill the governor proposed earlier this year as part of his broader fiscal plan. The Senate Resources Committee's version strips out the governor's sales tax proposal, which received fierce criticism from legislators, local leaders, and the public. It also dispenses with the governor's proposal to end corporate income taxes in the early 2030s. And it adds a $20 to $60 yearly income tax to support public education. Anchorage Republican Senator Kathy Geisel, who chairs the committee, says the state badly needs the revenue to pay for the services that Alaskans expect.
The fact is We are at the fiscal cliff that has been foretold for at least the last 10 years. I mean, we're not just at it anymore. We are falling over it.
The biggest change to the bill is a major shift to the way the state would calculate oil taxes. Instead of taxing net profits, the state would base its tax on the gross value of the oil itself. Anchorage Democratic Senator Bill Willikowski proposed the oil tax change, and he says it's an approach that has worked well in oil-rich states like Texas and North Dakota. He says alongside the state's royalty, it would mean Alaska would take about a third of the value of each barrel of oil.
The reality is, if we're getting a combined gross of right now 16% roughly, and every other state is getting close to 30%, I don't think we're maximizing the value of our oil as we're required to under the Constitution.
The new Senate version also drops some must-haves from Governor Dunleavy's fiscal plan. Dunleavy's tax plan was linked to limits on state spending and a constitutionally guaranteed permanent fund dividend. But with senior senators skeptical of those limits, the new version of the tax plan would stand alone. Fairbanks Senator Rob Myers, a minority Republican, says that means the bill no longer addresses the issues the governor's fiscal plan was intended to solve. That is, making the state's budget more stable and less vulnerable to wild swings in oil prices.
In my personal opinion, oil money and the patterns that it creates is what got us into this mess. And without a full fiscal plan, simply increasing oil taxes and a little bit of corporate tax, to me, is the financial equivalent of trying to cure a hangover with a shot of vodka. We're going the wrong direction here.
Bipartisan majority members passed the bill out of the Senate Resources Committee on a 5-2 vote on Wednesday, with the two minority Republicans opposed. The bill now heads to the Senate Finance Committee, where Giesel says she expects senators to take a closer look at the bill's impact. Senate leaders said earlier this year that finding new revenue was their top priority, but a committee co-chair said last week he wanted to ensure any changes wouldn't derail an expansion in North Slope drilling. This is KYUK News. I'm Evan Erickson. Koyana for listening. Please share your news tips, comments, or suggestions. You can email us at news@kyuk.org or message us on Facebook. And stay tuned for Yuktun Ganumchit coming up.